Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa and where the weather is excellent. Thank you for listening in. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, along with Pat Schlarbaum.
Great to be here, Ursula.
There is a slight chance of thunderstorms throughout today and maybe some tomorrow, but by Sunday the sun will be back out again in full force and we should be seeing rising temperatures in the high 80s and I think even maybe the low 90s today. This is expected to last at least through Wednesday, but it looks like we're in for quite a bit of sun. Art Walk is tonight. Please come to visit KHOI, where the annual Doodle Squad will be in its third year. We have Red's bands, Larry Stoltenberg and friends, performing as usual for inspiration while we have a canvas up on the wall ready for you to come and paint on. So just come on, join in, or you can just watch others paint and have some refreshments and enjoy the music. There are other events happening this weekend that you may want to know about. The public pianos will be unveiled this first weekend in June. Will be out until September 2017. And there will be a public piano unveiling celebration with a mini concert during our art walk on Main Street at Tom Evans Plaza today at 6:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. And another unveiling and mini concert will occur during Summerfest at Campustown in Campustown Court near the fire station tomorrow, Saturday, June 3rd, from 3 p.m. to 3:30. This is a reminder that the 5th annual Summerfest celebration will be on Saturday, June 6th, from 3 to 9 p.m. Most activities will be held on the 200 block of Welch Avenue, with lots of family activities from 3 to 6, including things like bingo, face painting, crafts, cookie decorating, and more. The Vinyl Vagabonds and Standing Hampton will be the featured music acts. There'll also be a root beer float garden at the end of the 200 block of Welch and a pop-up art market from 3 to 6 on the south side of Chamberlain and a Summerfest beer garden at the south end of the 200 block of Welch for people over 21. That starts at 3 p.m. Also, remember the Roosevelt Summer Sundays concert outdoors at Roosevelt Park on June 4th. Parranderos Latin Combo will perform. Concerts begin at 7 p.m. And again, KHOI Art Walk Doodle Squad from 5 to 8 here at KHOI at 410 Douglas. Please come by for music and participating in arts. And be sure to check out all of Art Walk happening from 5 to 8 p.m. this evening with artists and refreshments in many downtown businesses. Pat, it's good to have you back, and let's talk Falcons.
We've got some that are going to be banded and some that are going to be hatching. Currently up in Dubuque, Iowa, there's a pair that have taken up residency in the courthouse, and that site of that webcam I'll include on the...
The courthouse is...
Courthouse in Dubuque, Iowa.
In Dubuque.
And it's in the heart of an urban area.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's pretty high profile. There's also a pair at a rock cliff quarry site, which is at the base of the Eagle Point Park. The peregrine falcon was an endangered species. It's no longer endangered, thanks to a lot of partners around the Midwest and Iowa and the Raptor Resource Project and Bob Anderson. Bob Anderson and his project released falcons starting in 1998 at the Effigy Mounds. We consider Bob the father of falcons here mm-hmm. in Iowa. I mean, mm-hmm. the Decorah Eagle Cam kind of grew out of his involvement with raptors here in Iowa, but Bob passed away 2 years ago. But his project is still underway. Diligent work in returning falcons to the cliffs. His theory was that urban birds were not going to spill over to the wild areas. We needed to release them in wild areas and kind of imprint that habitat type on these birds. And in 2001, he was successful. Bob had become a falcon breeder, and he was raising these little falcons for releases in the cities, in the urban areas. And when they weren't transitioning from the urban areas back to the cliffs, he asked for permission to do that in Minnesota. And their Department of Natural Resources told him no, that it was going to be chaotic. And there's quite a predator of not only peregrines, but about all wildlife, are the great horned owls. And they mm-hmm. they said, you're just going to habituate a bunch of great horned owls to start viewing our peregrines as a possible prey base. And you're going to upset this delicate project that we're moving forward with. They were still in danger. But in 1998, the federal government made them no longer endangered, and that gave Iowa some leeway to say Iowa would provide him that opportunity, and he came to Ridgeway, Iowa then.
And you had something to do with that.
He needed our agency support.
You advocated for him to come and do that.
Yeah, I had talked to the people in such a manner that they would view this as a positive thing. So Bob started his work at Effigy Mounds in 1998. We would get them before they could fly at about 38 days and feed them for about a week. And then as they would attain their flight skills, we'd allow them to fly. And then in 2000, one of his released birds then nested on their lift. Bob had transmitters. And in fact, at the Effigy Mounds, we were able to document that when the experts said that great horned owls are going to kill all the peregrines, the great horned owls killed zero of those birds because of the location that he chose right on the river. Bob was over the moon, you know, his birds survived the first year, five nesting pairs, and now as many as a dozen. But the whole time this is unfolding, we had a second release going on in Dubuque. There was another falconer that had grown up in Dubuque, Tom Deckert. He now lives in the Quad Cities, and a falconer in Mason City named Lowell Washburn.
The falconer means somebody who
flies one of these birds. They accompany these birds on hunting forays and getting pheasants quite often. And
so a falconer is somebody who hunts with falcons.
Yeah, and they also have these grade-A personalities that it's quite amazing what they dedicate their life to. A falconer is first and foremost a falconer, and their whole lives revolve around this. So I was kind of caught in the middle of two rival personalities. When people have expressive passion, don't assume that they're going to
get along.
Get along or want to work with other falconers. So Bob released 19 at Effigy Mounds, and Lowell Washburn and Tom Deckert released 40 in Dubuque at this quarry site at the base of Eagle Point Park, and their birds all survived. So it was very uplifting, and since that time, you know, they've occupied the urban areas of the state, Cedar Rapids and Des Moines and all the cliffs, and there's about 19 nesting pairs in Iowa. But in a nutshell, in Dubuque later today, the pair that is nesting at the rock quarry that involved Tom Deckert and Lowell Washburn are going to meet with the new Raptor Resource Project. John is the new director.
Bob died 2 years ago, right?
2 years ago, yeah. Yeah, so in a way, these birds now have kind of brought these, you know, they're not necessarily rivals. They perform their duties on the planet in a parallel manner quite often, and they're very self-sufficient. So this is kind of a special thing.
So are you saying falcons brought these people together?
I think so. I think Bob's smiling down on this whole activity and would approve. I mean, the list is growing of people have really made the peregrine falcon work move forward. And as an agency, the Department of Natural Resources provided them the permits.
And you were a part of this, too.
Yes, yeah.
And now you're retiring very soon.
Yeah, I'm transitioning.
From your work with the Department of Transitioning from the Department of Natural Resources. So as you leave, do you feel a sense of confidence that the peregrine falcons are back in Iowa and are going to continue to spread?
Yeah, historically we had as many as five. That was in our plan, five nesting pairs. And this year we'll have as many as 19 in Iowa. Wow.
So that's more than success.
Because they are occupying some of these urban areas. Mm-hmm.
And now you mentioned that there was concern that the great horned owl would prey on the falcons, which didn't turn out to be true. The falcons themselves are quite formidable predators. What do they prey on?
Other birds and things as large as a duck. They're called a duck hawk or a rock hawk.
Amazing, because falcons are relatively small animals.
About half the size of a great horned owl, maybe three-fourths. But the great horned owls kind of rule the skies at night. Tigers of the night sky, they're just formidable predators. So these released falcons did not have the benefit of their adult parents to defend them. You know, they just go out there and try to make it, and they have.
Sounds like they have, yeah.
Yeah, and they have.
Do we have any in central Iowa?
Well, there's a pair at the Capitol in Des Moines. And
they're still there.
And a second pair downtown. We do not ban the ones at the Capitol. They don't allow us permission to go into that site for mm-hmm. safety reasons. And there's another pair down at Ottumwa here in central Iowa. So people that want to see these birds, right now is a great time to go to the east side of the People's House. The Capitol is a home to a pair that has been there since 2008.
And can you see them?
Oh, yeah, you'll definitely see them.
What do you look for?
Well, there's a triangle, a portico above the stairs as you look at the Capitol from the parking lot. Above the stairs, there's a triangle, like a large sheltered area. And on the in the right corner, the northeast corner of the Capitol, you'll see a 4-inch board with some whitewash. It's a wonderful thing because they do prey on pigeons. And the pigeon flocks that were such a detriment to the Capitol for decades are now absent.
So what happened?
Yeah, well, the falcons showed up, and the pigeons just decided they had a better place to roost. Yeah. You know, yeah. Away from there. So
you can see the falcons fly in and out?
Yes, they're feeding young, mm-hmm. so it's a prime opportunity to see them coming and going.
Okay. So that's Iowa State Capitol.
Yeah.
And speaking of feeding young, real quick, Pat, we have two birds feeding young right at the entrance of KHOI. We mm-hmm. have a speaker that Chris Ling put above the mm-hmm. front door of KHOI to actually play radio out mm-hmm. on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And we've had a family of birds that shows up every year now for the last 4 years without fail.
Yeah.
And right now they're feeding their young on that speaker right above the door.
Yeah.
They don't seem to mind the noise of the speaker, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to mind the coming and going of people in the door. They seem to like the protection there. What is that bird? It's a very cute bird. It's bigger than a sparrow, and the male is red.
They're house finches. They have such a beautiful song, so they complement the speaker, what comes out of the station. I mean, they have quite an interesting story that involved human dynamics also. They have a beautiful song. Their song enamored the many people that back in the 1940s, they were started relocating some from California to New York. There's an act in 1918 that says you cannot relocate birds like that. So they told them that you can't take any more birds from California to New York. In fact, these ones in New York you're going to have to let loose. So they did, thinking that they might perish or what have you. They were back in the wilds of the East Coast. And since the 1940s, they have been migrating. Their population has been moving, and growing back to the West Coast. And
so they're working their way back to the West Coast.
They're working their way back to California. Mm-hmm. And there is, interestingly, the population is doing better in California. In the 1940s, 50s, there was DDT, and there were some problems. So
do these birds migrate?
Yes, they do.
So they're just here for the summer.
Yeah, they're a summer bird. They're kind of new to Ames. 4 years ago, that was kind of right in the thick of it when they'd started arriving. So so it's one example of has a human component to it.
Right.
That is kind of welcoming. They really like hanging baskets in people's deck areas and things like that, or speakers.
Well, they're very nice. Yeah, if you come to Art Walk tonight, check out the bird nest sitting on top of our speaker. And it's very cute when the babies start flying, because we have wooden benches in front of the station, and the babies line up on the back of the wooden bench to use as a takeoff place. And
they have three or four.
It's very cute. Yeah, they usually have three or four.
Yeah, it's super, something to look forward to.
Thank you, Pat, for the bird update. And again, peregrine falcons in eastern Iowa and in the state capitol.
Yeah.
And what finch in our front door?
It's called a house finch.
House finch. Yeah, look for the little red bird.
Mm-hmm. Big Blue Sky, featuring Christine Castaneda and John Stravers.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg here with Pat Schlarbaum. And it is officially summertime. Lots going on this weekend, first weekend in June. Art Walk is tonight. As you may know, Art Walk is a great tradition of downtown Ames where you can go to different businesses this evening from 5 until 8 p.m. and enjoy different artists inside businesses or outside in front of businesses. There's usually also really great refreshments to be had. Lots of good company. Lots of people show up for this event. So be sure to come on down and enjoy this. KHOI is definitely part of this. Every year we have the Doodle Squad, which is where you are invited to help paint our gigantic yearly KHOI banner. Meanwhile, at Habitat for Humanity, there's going to be a master wood carver at work for you to check out. Art Mann is an Ames resident, part of the Iowa Woodcarvers Association. As far as I can tell from what I've seen, creator of really fun wooden figures, some of them quite poignant and some of them quite humorous. Thank you for stopping by, Art, and just spending a few minutes with us talking about your work. You're going to be at Habitat for Humanity, is that right?
That's correct, at their main office, which I think is on Clark Street, right across from the Hy-Vee drugstore.
Right across from the Hy-Vee drugstore.
Yeah.
Okay. It's between Main Street and the railroad tracks, right?
No, north.
Oh, north on the other side.
Yeah,
got it. Oh, right.
There.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, there's two other members of the Iowa Woodcarvers Association are here, Steve and Maggie Westfold. Thank you for coming as well. Maggie, let me ask you, for starters, what makes Art such a special woodcarver?
Steve and I got to know Art at a carving group in a private home in Ames. I used to have people gather up in their garage and carve. And it was just a fun sit down and talk and carve, and Art was one of those people. And Art was always, obviously, one of the people producing things that made people go, wow. I want to carve like that, and I still don't carve like that.
Describe one of his pieces.
The first piece I saw of Art's that impressed me was a very romantic box of some sort you had done for Bernie, for Bernadine, your wife. Tell me about that. I can't remember
just,
exactly.
It was just meant to be an old-time book. The covers were all warped, and it showed the pages that were kind of tattered and such, but it was Art and Bernie, a love story.
Right.
Yeah. My wife's name is Bernadine, and it was too long to get on the book.
Yeah, I've never forgotten that piece. Just very touching. That is probably one of the simpler carvings he's done. He studied under Marv Kaisersat in Minnesota, who just bends your mind with the carvings he does and the scenes that he creates and carves. And Art. Art's good. Let's put it that way.
Steve, what do you like about Art's work? Could you describe a piece that you've enjoyed?
I always tried to sit next to Art at those group get-togethers because he was clearly the best carver. There's a difference. He's an artist to begin with. I don't have artistic talent. I'm more of a replicator. I copy what I see that somebody else has done. One of the last carvings that he was working on was kind of a whimsical thing. It was a cow that, as I recall, was trying to scratch its head with one of its hind hooves. Wasn't that the theme?
Well, it was actually kicking me off the one-legged stool that I was sitting on. After we were married, my wife's folks were going to California for 2 weeks, and they wondered if I could keep Jersey from going dry. And that's a carving showing me that I didn't do a very good job of it.
It was an amazing carving. It's something that I would like to be able to carve, but I enjoyed it. I could watch a good carver all day. It's a fascinating thing to watch somebody take a piece of wood and end up with, in a very short period of time, end up with something beautiful. It's fascinating to watch.
Art, what will you be doing at the Art Walk event?
Pretty much sitting and talking.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to actually be carving as well?
I have a few pieces that I'll be working on during that time. These two folks put themselves down. Wood carvers have a tendency to do that no matter what the level is because We see other people that we admire for good reason. Nobody wants to acknowledge what they're capable of doing, and that burns me up.
So you're not going to sit there and put yourself down at Habitat Humanity
well,
tonight?
Well, no. I will enjoy talking to the people.
Mm-hmm. You'll answer questions about carbon?
Oh, sure, mm-hmm. sure. And mm-hmm. types of wood and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I brought a couple this morning with me. Since this is visual, right?
Uh-huh, right.
Visual with our words.
Oh, my.
This guy, as I was carving him, I didn't have his hair done yet. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, his face looks like he walked out of an Amazon jungle.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I put a bowl cut haircut on him. And at the first show that I had him just sitting on my table, two very blonde ladies that were tall came by and all of a sudden, I noticed them covering up what they were saying, but they were leaning towards each other. I said, okay, this has gone on long enough. What's the deal? What do you see in this carving?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, that's our Norwegian uncle. You know, I enjoy seeing what others, and it's just like the old... who is the guy on radio and used to say, and this is the rest of the story. And I enjoy what people see as the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm. You've got another character there, too.
Yeah. Now, as you can see, this one is not done.
This guy is grinning sheepishly.
I was thinking of Whoopi Goldberg with this. And I got far enough. I said, okay, maybe it could be. But I have a bunch of these that are not finished because mm-hmm. I got as far with them as I needed to, just as a reference for one part of it, maybe, the mouth grinning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I have given a bunch of those to Habitat, and they can use them however they want to. If they can raise some money with them, why, that's mm-hmm. fine.
And, we don't have enough carvers in Ames. They're hiding. If they're
they
here.
They do. They hide.
Yeah.
And another thing about Steve, he makes beautiful knives for carving.
Tell us a little bit about the Wood Carvers Association.
Well, the group that we all started with maybe was down in Des Moines, which is Mid-Iowa Wood Carvers. And basically it's a Des Moines club. I was president one year, and I'd always heard talk about, well, we should have a show. Every year that had come up. And finally I said, well, here's the deal. We're going to plan a show, and we're going to do it just like we're really going to do it. And as things developed, we could see that it was going far enough that it would be nice to be able to have a show. And so the committee that looked for a venue looked all over Des Moines, and the art museum in Des Moines wanted to snub their nose at us, and that's understandable. But the art community here in Ames has been much more receptive through the Octagon and such. And so we talked to the people at Ryman Gardens the first Saturday in May for going on 8 years now. Mm-hmm. We've been out there on the first Saturday, and it's been very successful. It's kind of symbiotic where things work together?
Mm-hmm.
They're good for us. It's a beautiful place to have a show, mm-hmm. and they enjoy having us, so it's worked out very well.
Well, thank you. We've been speaking with Art Mann, who's woodworker, and also Steve and Maggie Weervault, wood carvers. And Art is going to be at Habitat for Humanity, which is just north of the Highway Drugstore. And you're going to be doing some demonstrations, and will be very approachable to talk about woodworking.
Even with the knives in my hand, I'll be approachable.
Thank you so much for coming by and talking. Thank you, Steve and Maggie, for coming by as well.
Thank you.
Remember, Art Walk is today at 5 to 8 p.m. downtown in Main Street area. And lots of artists, Art, and many, many other great artists are going to be in the businesses, and there'll be refreshments and music, too. So come by. It's a really, really good time to be in downtown Ames. Thank you. And you're listening to Local Talk. That's DJ Okawari with Flower Dance. And thank you for joining us to listen in. And I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Pat Schlarbaum is also here. Last weekend, details came out about surveillance being carried out by an international private security firm called Tiger Swan on people in Iowa who've been protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline. This was reported by The Intercept, a nonprofit news organization that published leaked documents that revealed these details. In The Informer, an online newspaper, Ames journalist Gavin Aronson reported that The Intercept drew on documents provided by a contractor with the firm, Tiger Swan, and from public records request. According to the report, Tiger Swan also made videos to alarm people about the protesters and posted them on Facebook when they became frustrated after meeting with the FBI in Des Moines. With the reluctance of county law enforcement agencies to arrest or cite trespassing individuals, it seems that Tiger Swan focused mostly on the Mississippi Stand protest camp to try and stop the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline under the Mississippi River, and on Ed Fallon and the Bold Iowa Environmental Activism Organization he heads. Ed Fallon was quoted as responding by saying that he's honored that they felt they were big enough a threat to go to this level of intervention. It seems that Tiger Swan and Dakota Access, which are private companies, have been meeting with numerous local, state, and federal agencies, including the FBI, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, Department of Homeland Security, Iowa Department of Emergency Services, Iowa Department of Wildlife. This included information being given to the FBI about, quote, persons of interest. Boone County was identified as a target area, presumably because of the resistance there against the pipeline, especially with attempts to stop it from crossing the Des Moines River. And reportedly, they were looking to encourage the Boone law enforcement to find protesters and possibly arrest them. So this all hits pretty close to home. Brenda Brink is here from the Bakken Pipeline Resistance Coalition. You've been in Boone County a lot, Brenda, and along with many others from Central Iowa, you've been focusing on the Des Moines River. So let's talk about this. For starters, before we even get into that, there will be another flotilla coming up this June. To give us the date, and at the after we talk a little bit about this, let's go back and make sure that the details are told. But what's the date of the flotilla?
The flotilla will be June 17th, and this is a celebration of water protection.
Mm-hmm. And this is a flotilla will be on the Des Moines River.
Right, the Des Moines River west of Boone between Pilot Mound and Boone on mm-hmm. E18.
Have you felt any of this? Have you experienced anything that somehow indicates to you that there's been some problems?
This really wasn't something other than kind of a joke among us, because those of us from the coalition who had gone up to Standing Rock to support Standing Rock and the camps up there could see and hear the planes constantly, the helicopters constantly. So we assumed that there was surveillance up there, and therefore, if there's surveillance up there, anytime there gets to be a large gathering along the pipeline, you can assume that there's going to be surveillance. It just was something we kind of joked about. It's just too ironic. I mean, here we are, citizens having to step up to protect our water, of all things, because our governor and lieutenant governor have decided that they're rather have a out-of-state Fortune 500 company get the gains of our state rather than the citizens being protected. So, yeah, a water protector, it's a sad state of affairs. Just yesterday, actually, we just had an incident yesterday, which was, again, pretty ironic since the Intercept report and Grist also, another nonprofit news agency reported and had some documents they were going by about the surveillance. So yesterday, you know, four of us went out to the river because Dakota Access said, well, we're going to have oil flowing in that pipeline, which they've been saying but hasn't been true, and most of what they put out isn't true. But we thought, well, we'll just go down there by the river. The flotilla's coming up. We'll check out the river, see how high it is, just to mm-hmm. get together. So a tiny group of us, four of us, middle-aged and older people, were gathering there, and all of a sudden Dakota Access private security shows up and actually ended up identifying himself as being with Tiger Swan.
Really?
Yeah.
Where were you when they walked up?
We were just on public property. We just parked our cars to go over on the bridge to look at the river.
So you were
E18
just at the
bridge.
Side of the river?
Yeah.
By a road?
Yeah. Yeah, we're just on did I say private property? I'm sorry, public property.
Mm-hmm. And these people drove up in cars, or where did they come from? I mean, if you're just out in the...
Well, the landowner himself at the top of the hill has told us that he can be going up to his property, and within 15 minutes they show up. This is a level of surveillance. I'm sure they have cameras, and I'm sure that they have honed this over the last 2 or 3 years.
So presumably they're sitting in cars watching the territory with cameras?
Yeah,
Or maybe satellite.
Good point.
So somebody came up from Tiger Swan, which is this private surveillance company, and what did he say to you?
Well, first of all, he did the little shtick about, well, I'm not here to harm anybody, but what are you guys doing? And we're not inclined to tell him, of course, because it's none of his business. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're just there enjoying the river, appreciating the beauty of our county and our state.
On public property.
On public property. And so he just kept wanting to insert himself into what our little gathering conversation was. And even when a landowner stopped by to visit with us, one of the landowners who's been very vocal against the pipeline on his property, the operative came over and wanted to insert himself into that. But he is the same one that a member of our group had just been harassed by up at the gravel road at the top of the hill. So for him to come and try and act all friendly when all of a sudden we find out that he's the same one who was being very aggressive, it's just too much.
What exactly did he want with you?
I assume he wanted to get information from us, whether there was going to be a bigger gathering coming.
But what did he actually literally say other than...
Oh, he was just trying to become friendly with us.
He was just making small talk?
Small talk, but also asking questions like, what's going on here? And I'm not going to, cause trouble. I'm just observing. And, of course, he was videoing us.
He was videotaping.
Oh, yeah, and taking pictures of our license plates.
That's very overt.
Yes, yes. It was ridiculous. Overt to the point of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And what did you say to him?
We just pretty much ignored him. We got out our video camera, which we've had for our protests. That's at the point where he decided, he'd just back off a little bit, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there was also a moment where after we'd gotten, it was pretty warm yesterday in the sun, so we decided to go down and check out where we were going to be putting in canoes and watercraft for the flotilla. And he had to follow us, and then some other person who has been seen around doing private security as well, but from Boone, showed up and, made a big deal about stopping where the pipeline crossed the gravel road, which was on our path, and then checked on us later when we were down at the river. I mean, it's just they're obviously bored. What else can you say except we gave him something to put in a report, I guess.
Do you know the people who were directly targeted, the Mississippi Stand protest camp?
Of course, we know some of the people because they've come to Central Iowa as well. And
can you describe them? The people that they were
targeting?
Yeah, targeting.
Well, I mean, everybody that was down there. We had 100 Grannies members down there, people who have been climate change activists protecting, our planet, protecting our water. So people of all ages were down there. There were people who came to support from other states, I assume. I didn't get down there myself, so...
Mm-hmm.
Just people for the cause trying to say, this isn't right.
They were also involved with making videos that presented these people in a negative light. In fact, they were comparing protesters to jihadists and describing their cause as an ideologically driven insurgency with a strong religious component.
And again,
can you
ridiculous.
Comment? Is that those? Can you characterize any of those people in that way?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. This was, we had over and over again, we had trainings on nonviolent civil disobedience, and that is the cornerstone of America. It's how we got started in America. So I don't think there's really anything more patriotic than being able to gather in a group and possibly, if necessary, committing civil disobedience in order to promote the rights and to promote the basic needs of Americans, which is really water.
Earlier on when the climate march happened, Susan Franson spoke with some of the people who were walking across the state to the state capitol to the climate march, and they were reporting that they were encountering hostility in some towns because, and even some intimidation, because people had seen videos which characterized them as dangerous people. Do you think that these videos that Tiger Swan made, is that what they're talking about?
I have no doubt that's what they're talking about. And mm-hmm. and those videos have been taken down now because they got called out on it. So mm-hmm. this person who did started up the videos, at least the spokesperson viewed, you know, shown on there, I mean, he's using a fake name for crying out loud. I think that it's very important to distinguish between these out-of-state private security that characterize law-abiding citizens in Iowa who are simply exercising the rights provided to us and trying to take care of our resources from the people brought in who all of a sudden are paramilitary. I mean, you look at their website and is this really what we want to bring in to divide us instead of helping to improve our communities?
This is reporter Susan Franzen from KHOI. I'm talking with Jessica Fear.
Right now I'm camped in Montezuma, Iowa. I think it's Diamond Trail. It's actually a really beautiful, beautiful park. I highly encourage everyone to come visit it if they get a chance. But we're going to be starting our march to Searsboro today. We're down in Powhatchik County on the Climate Justice Unity March. We started out in Little Creek Camp, which it was incredible. I'd been there about a month or so before, and the camp's already grown, and they've got mulch trails and a great kitchen and everything going, so it's nice to see that expanding. And again, another place I would encourage people to visit, and especially if you're not familiar with the concept of the sustainable living, and it's a great educational place.
Now, could you talk a little about the origin of Little Creek Camp and its relation to Standing Rock?
So Little Creek Camp started after Standing Rock, and it's not fighting a pipeline kind of directly, you know, it's not in the path of anything, and it's on private land, but it's a place of prayer and relaxation and healing so that people who are fighting those battles have a place to come. And then, again, the sustainable living, they're just trying to teach people more about what you can do and what the little things you can change about the way you live that can make a big impact.
Are most of the people there indigenous or?
It's a blended group. A lot of people kind of come and go, too, from the camp. I don't live at the camp. I have a job. I live in Ames, and I come, though, when I have time. There's always projects to do.
Well, has you started on your march yesterday. Was there anything dramatic that happened yesterday?
So there was a video that was put out on the Internet that was kind of a smear campaign about the march. It, you know, had these stories of eco-violence and that we were going to come trash these little towns. So a lot of people saw that and got concerned. They were worried, you know, that we were going to come tear up their town. While we were marching, we had people who were, you know, flipping us off. At night, there were people circling around, honking their horns. You know, kind of an intimidating situation, which I've never really experienced in Iowa. And as we marched into Deep River, there was a big lawn right next to the campground area. And it had a Jeep with two flagpoles on it. One had an American flag and one had a Confederate flag. You know, to me, that sends an immediate sign of, don't talk to these people. And it even puts a little bit of concern, again, for the safety of the people who are with us, the people of color. Later on that night, you know, we were camping and just singing around the campfire. After we went to sleep, we started hearing what sounded like gunshots or firecrackers. And it was a really scary situation. So one of the ladies with us did decide to phone the police and just let them know, hey, this is what we're experiencing out here. Nobody's come and threatened us directly, but we're just a little concerned. And the county sheriff went over and talked to them and told them, hey, you know, you are scaring them. And they put the Jeep away. Everything pretty much quieted down after that. The next morning, as we were getting up and we were packing to leave, I was over sitting in a van grabbing some stuff. And there was a guy in a golf cart driving over, and I recognized it was the guy who owned the Confederate flag Jeep. So I got nervous, thinking, oh, no, what's he coming over here to say this morning? But all of a sudden, I heard people laughing. And I walked over, and he basically, you know, he said, I apologize. I realize now that what I saw and what I heard about you was wrong. And I'm sorry I scared you guys. So that I, you know, that was and that wasn't my intent. You know, it made a lot of us kind of tear up. So these small towns, most of them had actually originally welcomed us. We'd set up churches and various things like that that we could stay at all along the route. But when this video came out, we started getting phone calls and nasty letters and stuff saying, you can't stay here and we don't want you here. Like I said, I'm just so surprised because that's not the Iowa that I know. And the video did paint it as us not being Iowans, so I get that that's part of it. So the gentleman who had come over and apologized came and he sat and he talked to all of us. And then later that night, we had a forum in Montezuma here at the Diamond Trail Lake. He came out with his wife. He said he'd tried to get his friends to come out, but they had refused. And I said, well, you know, I think that says a lot more about you than them, you know. So later that night when we had the forum with everybody and we had the gentleman who had the Confederate flags out earlier that day, he and his wife were there. While they were here, there were people circling around the area we were camping in. And some of them would yell things. And some of them were being pretty nasty. And they said, wow, is this what you've been dealing with? I feel awful. And one of the Native women spoke up and said, this is what I deal with all the time. And you could just kind of tell that they had a new understanding. You know, I mean, I guess for me, that's what the whole reason I'm walking 85 miles.
This is reporter Susan Franson from KHOI in Ames, Iowa.
This is Local Talk, and you just heard there an interview recorded by Susan Franson a few months ago, just prior to the People's Climate March in April. I'm Ursula Rudenberg here in the studio with Brenda Brink with the Bakken Pipeline Resistance Coalition, and she has been describing surveillance activities they have experienced in Boone County around the pipeline where it meets the Des Moines River. It is, I guess the last thing I want to ask you is you are planning this flotilla for the Des Moines River on the 17th?
Right.
Of June?
Right, it's going to be fun.
I've been on that flotilla, and it is fun. But what would you say to those who feel that it might be dangerous to be involved because of the surveillance?
I would say that would probably be the least of our concerns as far as our organizing. We're concerned about safety. And we're concerned
Water safety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're concerned people have a good time. I find that these are the surveillance folks are bullies. And a bully will try to get you, for example, they've actually said to some of the water protectors, well, if you were alone, you know, we would really get you. So that's sort of a sentiment. I don't think there's any way they're going to bother us that day because it's a family-friendly event. It's a big gathering. It has all the earmarkings of being a good time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you're exhibiting empowerment where their tactics are fear and intimidation and thanks for standing your ground for clean water.
You bet. It's a coalition. We're all in it together.
And the Tiger Swan has been described this way. It's a firm founded by members of the U.S. Army's Elite Delta Force Unit, and it's headquartered in North Carolina and has offices around the world, including the Middle East and Latin America. So it's an international company. And since 2008, has received nearly $60 million in State Department contracts for security work around the world. And the firm did once work with Blackwater, which is the private mercenary security firm that we've known about more from the Iraqi war days. And so they apparently have found it worth their while to be in Iowa right now as as Iowa kind of identifies itself as the last stand against the Dakota Access Pipeline starting up, which it has not started up yet. And so this is Brenda Brink, who's with us. She's with the Bakken Pipeline Resistance Coalition. Real briefly, Brenda, can you describe what that coalition is?
Our mission has always been to bring together the groups that are interested in protecting water, other basics that we have always kind of taken for granted, like you have landowner rights. But our basic thing is to stop the pipeline. And a lot of people will say, well, why are you even meeting? Because that pipeline's in the ground. And what we say is We're still not convinced that the oil is flowing. There have been three leaks already, and the pipeline wasn't even operational. It was just tested, and there were three leaks already. We feel like there's still a lot we can do to raise the awareness that this was a rook, this was something where the governor and our leaders should have stopped and given more protections to us. There's also a specter of fracking. Excuse me. And so there's various things that we as a coalition, because of our structure and the connections we've made now, that we're not quite sure we need to disband quite yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and again, the time and the place for the flotilla?
The flotilla will be at E18 Bridge, which is northwest of Boone, before you get to Pilot Mound. And that time, I'm pretty sure, is 11 o'clock. I meant to look at that this morning.
And it's June 17th.
June 17th.
And where should one go for information?
We really want people to register,
mm-hmm.
So that we know the food, because it's not just a flotilla, it's fellowship mm-hmm. and food afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And they can go to our website, nobakken.com.
Nobakken.com. And you also have a Facebook page.
Right.
Bakken
Pipeline Resistance.
Okay. And we're speaking with Brenda Brink from the Bakken Pipeline Resistance Coalition. Okay. Thank you for joining us today. And this has been Local Talk. I guess it's time to wrap up the show.
Thank you, Ursula.
And absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, Pat Schlarbaum, who's also been here,
mm-hmm.
and Art Mann stopped by, and Maggie and Steve Verwoldt, and Brenda Brink has been with us to talk about the flotilla that's happening on June 17th. And Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor today. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Richards and Al Harris and Tom Richards from the Ballad of Kate Shelley. And Local Talk is aired at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. And we, as you may have noticed, we're now airing Democracy Now! From 8 to 9 in the morning and returning at 9 to Morning Masterpiece. We're doing this because of the rapidly changing news events, and we want to get to the news to you in a timely fashion. So remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio. And Pat, based on what you said earlier, do you want to take us out with the First Amendment?
Oh, great. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.
This spring, KHOI asked you, our loyal listeners, to help us raise money toward our operations expenses. Thanks to your generosity and that of several premier donors who established a matching grant, we were able to exceed our fundraising goal. Because of your support, we are able to continue serving Central Iowa through the broadcast of community ideas and values for the foreseeable future. If you would still like to contribute to KHOI, give us a call at 515-292-2878 or visit us online at khoifm.org and click the donate button. Thank you again for making KHOI a reality in the heart of Iowa, and we'll see you again on the radio.